Right, let's turn our attention to another news story. Elon Musk has told BBC News that his takeover of Twitter was painful. In a live interview with our North America technology reporter James Clayton in San Francisco, the billionaire said his relationship with the media was often difficult. He also said he would sell the social media platform if the right person came along.
This hasn't been some sort of party. It's been really quite a stressful situation. So it's been quite painful, but I think at the end of the day, it should have been done. I think, were there many mistakes made along the way? Of course, all's well that ends well. Have I shot myself in the foot with tweets multiple times? Yes. I think I should not tweet after 3 a.m. If you're gonna tweet something that maybe is controversial, save it as a draft and look at it the next day and see if you still want to tweet it. I sometimes sleep in the office. There's a library that nobody goes to on the seventh floor, and there's a couch there, and I sleep there sometimes.
In rough numbers, a revenue dropped from $4.5 billion to $3 billion, expenses went from $4.5 billion to $6 billion, creating a $3 billion negative cash flow situation, and Twitter having $1 billion in the bank. That's 4 months to live. So unless drastic action was taken immediately, this company's going to die and be owned by the banks.
Let's talk about that drastic action, because almost immediately you sacked a lot of Twitter workers. I spoke to them. It was very easy to speak to them when it happened. And the way they said, mm-hmm. pretty much everyone said, is that it felt quite haphazard.
It was.
And it felt a little bit uncaring.
Say uncaring. The issue is like the company's either going to go bankrupt, or if we do not cut costs immediately, this is not a caring, uncaring situation. It's like if the whole ship sinks, then nobody's got a job.
How is it going? Is Twitter in profit now?
No, Twitter is I'd say we're roughly break even at this point.
And I think you've said before you see a world where you could be in profit. Is there a timeline on that, do you think?
I mean, depending on how things go, if current trends continue, I think we could be profitable. To be more precise, we could be cash flow positive this quarter if things keep going well.
This quarter, as soon as that?
Possibly, yeah.
That was Elon Musk speaking to our North America technology reporter, James Clayton. Well, let's talk to Fetsi Talcap, who is the gadget detective, who joins me now. Wow, lots of stuff in there for us to unpick. What did you make of this interview?
Yeah, it was quite a bipolar interview. I mean, at times he was extremely open and at times very defensive and even aggressive and tried to interview the interviewer, I have to say, with some success. There were a number of things that stood out for me, because one of the main criticisms of his tenure as CEO of Twitter, and by the way, he claims no longer to be the CEO. He now claims his dog. He says his dog is now the CEO of Twitter. His dog, and I quote, has taken over. Because you may remember there was a Twitter poll some months ago where he asked the great and the good of Twitter to decide whether he should step down as CEO.
Yes.
And there was an overwhelming vote saying he could. And then he said, I'm on lookout for someone, but it's not easy to find someone. So it's just very reassuring to know that he's found someone extremely well qualified to take over his job as CEO, being his dog. But that sort of sets the tone, because he's obviously a very, very smart guy. But it's very hard to view him as a serious actor when he says things like that. There were a number of things that really stood out to me, and I think it speaks to the concerns about his tenure and the rise of hate speech on his platform, which really hit a nerve when he was accused of that, and he pushed back hard against it. But I think he hung himself by his own petard. He said, who's to say that something is misinformation? And I quote, one person's misinformation is another person's information. He's effectively saying there's no such thing as truth or facts or fact-checking. So, they have rules about that sort of thing. There are laws about that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And if he can't tell the difference and even questions whether there is such a thing as a fact, that's deeply worrying. He then Went on to accuse the BBC of misinformation over COVID, over the information they gave about masking, vaccination. And I quote, he said, COVID is no longer an issue. And I can tell you it's very much an issue for a lot of people, particularly vulnerable people. Mm. And it just, it was in some senses completely tone deaf interview. He doesn't really understand how some people feel about his tenure.
And when you take that all on board, and his desire originally to own Twitter or you know, be the CEO, even if his dog is now the CEO, it doesn't really bode well for the future of Twitter. I mean, he was saying in the clip that we just played that, oh yeah, he reckons they can break even this quarter. Mm. But there must be millions of people leaving Twitter for the very reasons that he's saying are all about free speech, etc., because of the kind of backlash that they're getting personally.
I think that's true, but at the same time, you know, that shift in the politics of Twitter and what's allowed, and, you know, reinstating Donald Trump and Andrew Tate's accounts and so forth, that probably will have attracted some other people onto the platform. So Twitter has changed as a place. I'm not sure that I buy, he's in better position to know his figures, but he's got a vested interest in presenting his financials in a certain way. But he was essentially saying Twitter, when he bought it, was 3 or 4 months away from collapse, mm-hmm. from bankruptcy, which begs the question, why would you offer $44 billion for something when you could pick it up for much less when it's closer to that point? It doesn't seem to me to make a lot of sense. But I think one of the things that concerns me also, Jamoke, is that he said when he changed his mind about buying it, he said it's because there were far more bots on there, you know, accounts that were not humans but that were computer programs for promulgating, you know, fake news and the like. And he says, you know, he's working to do away with that. But one of the things that he's done, because he's now desperate, Twitter has to turn a profit because he's borrowed a lot of money to buy Twitter. Yes, he's sold Tesla stock, but it is also highly leveraged the company. So it has to make money and it has to do it quickly. So what he's done is he's taken the blue tick system, which was a system that was free. Mm-hmm. And what it did was it allowed people to know that when they were talking to someone who purported to be a certain individual or organization, that they were actually that person or organization. Therefore, you know, denying the ability of others to fake those accounts successfully. Now he's changed it. The blue tick is something that gives you a few extra bells and whistles and a blue tick, and you have to pay for it. But it's no longer that thing of verifying that person or organization is who they say they are. So he's actually opened the door to huge numbers of fake accounts, which are now coursing their way through Twitter, unfortunately.
He
says one thing, but he's doing quite something else, I think.
Do you think in its current iteration that Twitter can survive, or will it just become a silo for those who believe that free speech in whatever form is what it needs to be, and, you know, and be damned, the rest of it is irrelevant to those people who stay with it? I mean, the idea of this blue tick, which now everybody, and you could say on the one hand it's a democratic thing, but on the other hand, of course, it, as you've rightly pointed out, creates a whole another layer of problems, because you don't know who's true and who isn't.
Yeah, so those two things are not mutually exclusive. Twitter can survive, and it can become a den of iniquity, as it were. You know, I just don't know. You know, on the one hand, you know, I've always had a great deal of respect for Elon Musk in the sense that you know, prior to Twitter, he was solving problems that face humanity, like the need to get off this planet, and, you know, with SpaceX, and doing things that NASA and others should have been doing. Yeah. And also with Tesla, you know, moving away from fossil fuels and all of that. That's all fantastic, but he kind of seems to have lost the plot. And when he says, for example, that he took pleasure in removing the blue tick from the New York Times, it undermines any trust that people can have. When the boss of Twitter says that, he's you know, blowing the dog whistle, in my opinion. It's a shame. Extremely talented man. Some of the interview was very candid, like when he said he ended up buying Twitter because a judge told him to. Yeah. Well, you know, it's kind of charming in a sort of boyish kind of way, but he's now playing with things that make a difference. You know, the election outcomes and so forth can be affected by what goes on social media.
I suppose you could also look at Zuckerberg and say that the personality of the owner is part and parcel of the actual social media, but less so with Mark Zuckerberg, but more so with Elon Musk. I mean, he is the person. I mean, it's not just a business. It's become about him and his ideas and his reign, and then that leads to some uncomfortable things, particularly when you think about the BBC, and it sounds like now it has resolved itself and it will be properly credited.
But so he labelled the BBC and NPR in the States and other publicly funded bodies as being government funded. Now, to be clear, the BBC does receive about £90 million in direct government funding, but that's for the World Service, and that's less than 2% of what it earns in licence fee, and the licence fee itself is only about 70% of the BBC's income because it makes money from royalties and the ability to earn money abroad. So, you know, to describe the BBC as government-funded is clearly, in my opinion, fallacious, and he says he's changing it to public funding. From government funded to publicly funded. We shall see. Elon Musk says a lot of things. Some of them come to pass, some have yet to do so.
One of his comments was about TikTok and how he doesn't think it should be banned. TikTok has become, you know, one of the premier, or, you know, in the eyes of certainly young people, at social media accounts. What are your thoughts about that whole row, or, you know, insights with regards to TikTok and the challenges it presents worldwide, it seems now?
Okay, so first of all, with regard to his comments, so the difficulty is that, you know, he says, I don't generally like to ban things, therefore, even though it's a competitor, I don't think it should be banned. At the same time, he has huge interests, financial interests in China. So you start to wonder and view things through the lens of his business interests, and you wonder, you know, why is he saying what he's saying? He could be being genuine, he could not. With regard to TikTok itself, I think that there, you know, we've seen that there has now been a ban on ministers and civil servants' official phones from having TikTok installed. I think TikTok does present a threat, which is over and above that of say, American-owned companies, which also collect huge amounts of information about us. But because it is Chinese company, ByteDance is a Chinese company, that company has to cooperate with the Chinese state and the organs of the Chinese state if required to. So that means that they can, you know, the Chinese government could use TikTok to get information about government ministers. So when you have TikTok on your phone and you're a government minister and you are communicating on that phone, that all that communication is open to being stolen, as is your location, of course. Mm. So if you're about to have that secret meeting with Zelensky and suddenly you, TikTok notice that the phones of certain government ministers are coalescing on a particular location, that's kind of not a good thing. I actually would have liked to see the ban go further, Jamaica. I would have liked them to have banned it, not just for ministers and civil servants, but all members of parliament. And I would like to see that ban extended to the personal phones of those individuals as well, because we know, we've had plenty of evidence that MPs use their personal phones for government business. They shouldn't, but they do, and therefore the ban should extend to that. Because again, if they've got TikTok on their personal phone, so they've got their government phone in one pocket, they've got their personal phone in the other pocket, you can still track that minister's location because you know that those two phones are owned by the same person. So I think TikTok is dangerous. I think all social media is dangerous, but you have that extra tier of danger by dint of its close relationship to the Chinese state.
And how dangerous do you believe the current, I mean, people keep looking into it now, AI, ChatGPT, I mean, what are your concerns, if any, around that?
Well, there was a letter, wasn't there, signed by 1,000 people who work in the field of AI saying that we should have a six-month moratorium, a freeze on the development of AI. And we should, and 6 months isn't long enough. That's never going to happen. And all the people who signed that letter who've been developing this technology for years know, well, it's not going to happen. And I just think they give themselves the comfort of saying, well, we did warn you, having developed these very dangerous tools, we did warn you that they could pose as an existential threat. But it's not going to happen. And the reason why it's not going to happen is there is an AI arms race going on, both on the military side, where you know, governments are worried that if they don't develop artificially intelligent weapons and enemy powers do, that they will be weak. And that's the whole thing with nuclear arms. It's the same thing. So we have an AI arms race in the military field and then in the commercial field. So let's say I run a taxi company and I say, you know what, I'm not going to replace all my drivers with AI software that will drive the cab itself. So that's great. But then the cost of fares with me is maybe double that of the Uber, who's invested heavily in this. Mm-hmm. So I go out of business. I become the equivalent of the hackney carriage drawn by horses. that's the problem. So you've got this imperative for it to be developed commercially and militarily. The question is this term called alignment. Alignment is how do we make sure that the programming and actions of these AIs in the future are aligned with the best interests of human beings?
Yeah.
And so far, there's been no compelling answer to that question. And you have to say that if you have AIs that will hugely outnumber us and be hugely smarter than us, and bear in mind that ChatGPT-4 has just completed an IQ test and scored 114.
Gosh.
And that's not even the important thing. AI is as stupid as it's ever going to be today.
Right.
From if tomorrow, wow, it is smarter, and the day after. And the thing is, with human beings, we are as dumb as we through the generations going through thousands of years. Our progeny are not inherently smarter than us. They have the same capacity as mm-hmm. us. We don't get smarter with each generation. So although at the moment we could be said to be smarter than the AIs, the AIs are on a curve that's going to start curving upwards and turn almost vertical.
Gosh.
So and at that point we will be, I hate to say it, but we will be like ants to them, and we can only hope that we don't draw undue attention to them, to ourselves.
This is where I really hope, Fetty, that we end up with a plug that we can pull.
I think the AI would have thought of that. Oh. It's going to be kind of smart.
Smarter than us. Oh, my gosh. It's doom and gloom today in terms of technology, or scary.
Well, it depends how you view it, right? Yeah. This is evolution. I mean, if I was a Neanderthal or Cro-Magnon man, I might be saying, what can I do to stop these Homo sapiens taking over? And the truth is, you can't. But actually, there is a little bit of Cro-Magnon and Neanderthal in most of us. And I don't just mean figuratively, right?
Yeah.
So in the same way, you could view this as a step in evolution. I think the only way that humans survive this process is that we cease to be pure human. We start to integrate with that technology so that we can advance at a similar rate to the non-human based AIs. And that will happen. You're already seeing people, we wear technology. Soon that technology will break the barrier of our skin, and we're probably one of the last generations of pure humans, you know, that we're kind of on the road to being some sort of cyborg thing. not necessarily a bad thing, you know. I mean, I don't know. The benefits are going to be amazing. And I also think, on a plus point, I have no doubt that AI will, in fairly short order, solve climate change. It will solve hunger, possibly even world peace, although that one might be a little bit harder because that to solve world peace, it might decide you have to get rid of humans, right? But I think that there's amazing possibilities for this technology. The only problem is, how do we keep a rein on it? And I just don't see how we're going to do that.
Well, OK, I'm taking a deep breath after that conversation, Fetty, but it's always a joy to speak to you, for sure. So knowledgeable, but actually kind of the future is a bit scary.